is the End User, episode 110 for Friday, October 5th, Input Phobia. Hello and welcome to the End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am Big Bird supporter, Taylor Martin.
So I guess you watched the debate then.
Well, I mean, you didn't have to watch the debate to know that Big Bird was featured prominently.
Yeah.
But I did watch the debate. And, I'm in favor of Big Bird more than Mitt Romney. I'll tell you that much.
Big Bird has your vote then.
Big Bird for president, 2012.
All right. I don't know about that one. But I do know that we have a bunch of tech news to talk about. I feel like this is one of the more active weeks we've had in a little while in terms of news.
I never know when you're going to think it's an active week or it's a slow week.
We do always seem to disagree on that for some reason.
Right. Well, it's an active week for Apple because they're doing something they've never done before, and that is apologize.
Yeah. This has never happened as far as I can see. Has it?
Steve Jobs has taken some contrite notes. I mean, remember when he gave $100 back for first-generation iPhone buyers?
Well, sort of, but I don't know. It wasn't the same, it wasn't the same kind of tone. It was a different...
It really wasn't. I mean, so CEO Tim Cook has now issued a public apology letter on Apple's website. It's apple.com/letter-from-Tim Cook on Maps, just saying, you know, our bad. You know, we messed up on the Maps thing, and we're sorry for any trouble you had. And then he goes on to recommend other apps like Bing and MapQuest.
Like Bing?
Yeah,
I guess. Never in a million years would I think that he would recommend Bing Maps.
Now, the irony is I tried some of the things that he recommended, and I didn't like any of them because they weren't updated to fit the new iPhone 5.
Not even Waze? Waze is the one that I have used before, and it seems
I didn't try Waze because that one costs money.
Oh, that's right. And on the iPhone, you do not get free trials of software, so you can't do that kind of thing like you can on Windows Phone.
La-di-da for you.
And here I was trying to get a subtle dig in.
Yeah, it didn't work at all. It was not subtle. It was a dig, though. It hurt. I hope you feel good about yourself.
I do now, although my screen's still shattered, so I don't know about that part. I'm just looking forward to the Windows Phone 8 stuff that's coming down the pipeline. But anyway, so this is unprecedented for Apple. I've never seen them do this kind of thing, so... this is the Tim Cook era. Is that what we can say now, I guess? You know, it's official. This is it. Is this a sign of that?
It's just one more step in the road. I mean, it's not at all out of character for him, but sure.
Him.
I mean, this is a big thing. This is definitely a major public thing that Steve Jobs never would have done. But on the other hand, it's just a website. You know, it's just a web page on Apple's site. Lets people know that they're working on it.
And he's got the reverse order in his list. Bing, MapQuest, Waze, Google, or Nokia Maps. I feel like that is the exactly backwards, perhaps, except for maybe Bing and MapQuest.
Backwards in terms of what, Chris?
From best to worst.
Ah, best to worst. He's not beholden to your views on mapping software.
Yeah.
But you're saying, so Google is second best and then Nokia is best?
I don't know. I've actually never used the Nokia map, so I can't really form an opinion about that one. But I do hear that it is really good, although I'd put Google Maps up there at number one if you forced me to choose.
Well, if you are running iOS 6 and you absolutely can't live without Google Maps, there's always the web app. But the web app was missing a couple of features up until this week, and Google's figured out a way to get Street View onto their web interface on iOS. And I don't think that, have you been able to use Google Street View on Windows Phone?
I'm pretty sure it's there. There's a Google Maps application called Gmaps that I use, and I'm pretty sure it has Street View.
Oh, okay, cool. Because Street View on the regular website is still a Flash application. So
Was
I
it
can't, yeah, it is
Flash on the
Flash.
regular website? Really?
Yeah, it is. And I
Wow.
can't imagine that this was an easy port for them.
Yeah, I did not
But they
know
must
that.
have pushed that through pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's kind of questionable using Flash.
Right. So if you are stuck with iOS 6 and you are very unhappy about losing Google Maps, as actually a lot of people I know are, and I'm stuck with iOS 6 and no Google Maps, check out the maps on Safari. You just go to maps.google.com and then you've got everything you had before, including Street View.
And to be quite honest, that web app is pretty darn good, right?
Yeah, it's great. All of Google's web apps are quite good. It's not as seamless as even the old Maps app was. I would say that. I would say if Maps is a killer feature for you and you're still on iOS 5, I would recommend sticking with it for now.
So I just had a look at the Windows Phone app that I use called GMaps Pro. And I think it's a couple bucks to download this thing, but it does have Street View, so that's interesting. So Google does have an API for Street View. That's not something that I was aware of.
That's pretty great. And
Yeah,
it's not in
that is pretty
Flash.
cool. No, it can't be in Flash if it's in this Windows Phone app, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, no, it can't be because Windows Phone doesn't have Flash. Actually, no one has Flash anymore on mobile platforms as it stands.
That's true, because they're not making it anymore.
And so another phone that doesn't have Flash is indeed the Windows Phone, the Lumia 920, and it looks like it's going to be an exclusive on AT&T coming in November. So for me, this is disappointing. I'd like to see them come to Verizon.
You know, you should count yourself lucky that Verizon's getting any Windows 8 phones.
Yeah, it's true. They really skimped out on the Windows Phone 7 devices, and so they'll do better this round, but. AT&T previously was the carrier that had all of the Windows phones for the most part. Now, I think Sprint had one and Verizon had one, which is the one that I have, and AT&T had a couple. They had the Focus. There was one from LG, I think. So I suppose the Lumia 920 is the Windows Phone 8 device, as far as I'm concerned, and I think AT&T is their premier carrier in the United States, at least.
Well, HTC is saying that they're the Windows Phone 8 device.
Yeah, and I think the right response to that is okay. Well, we'll see how many you sell.
Right. Now, but another point that I want to make is that if you're on AT&T, you've got pretty good news coming no matter what operating system you're running. So they've got the iPhone 5, which I just picked up this week, and I'm very happy about it. And they're going to get the Nokia Lumia 920. And they've also got a whole truck full of Android phones coming out between now and the end of the year. So just to go through them really quickly, you've got the Galaxy Rugby
Yeah.
Pro and the Galaxy Express
Take a
from
breath.
Samsung,
Take a breath before you
the
start that
HTC
list.
One V, the HTC One VX, the HTC One X Plus, the Sony Xperia TL, the LG Optimus G, the Samsung Galaxy Note 2, and the Samsung Galaxy Tab 2 10.1.
So that's a and what's the time frame on all of these?
All before the end of the year.
Wow, that's kind of crazy.
Oh, and there's one more. It's the first official launch of the Chinese branded Huawei with the Fusion 2. Unfortunately, not one of their better phones. That one is going to be still running Gingerbread.
Ouch, still gingerbread. Yeah, Huawei is like an up-and-coming manufacturer. We're going to start to see a little bit more of them, I think.
Yeah, or we're going to see a bunch of Huawei phones that are branded by the carrier.
Yeah, well, if you remember, that's how HTC got their start. And
Yeah.
they really became a serious consumer name brand eventually. And they started making Windows mobile phones. And they started with, a couple feature phones even. And they made, like, if you looked at under the battery, it would say HTC in tiny letters, and then it would be branded by the carrier. So if they're trying to follow in HTC's footsteps, then they're starting off right.
Sure. Now, more good news for T-Mobile fans. I feel like we talk about T-Mobile like the least compared to every other carrier in the U.S.
Yeah, probably. Are they the smallest, or is Sprint the smallest at this point? They're in a race to the bottom, as it seems.
I think they are the smallest.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But Sprint is going to spin-off Metro PCS. I think they have a little bit of a share in that. And they're going to merge with T-Mobile USA. And the only reason I mention this is because they're going to refocus on no contract offerings. So they're going to be offering really great wireless deals where you can bring your own phone. And the only reason I mention that is because we've got this really cool map in the show notes this week of people who have crowdsourced a secret 3G map of T-Mobile spots that have 3G that supports the iPhone 3G service that is the 1900 megahertz band, which is actually, you know, if you have an iPhone 4 or a 4S, it's going to be much faster on T-Mobile if you're in one of these spots, which is most of the major cities in the U.S.
Yeah, that's about how it works out. It's all of the metropolitan areas and then sparse
but the
in
thing
between.
Is, the thing is that most of these metropolitan areas are unannounced. So if you go to the T-Mobile site, you won't find them there.
Yeah, so they need to hire a new marketing team or something.
Well, I mean, they'll become announced eventually. I guess they're just beta testing or something. You know, with over 1 million iPhones on the T-Mobile network, people are paying attention to this.
Wouldn't that be neat if Google used their Street View cars to measure signal strength in areas as well? That would be kind of cool, and you could know ahead of where you're going if you will have phone reception or not. You know, they could just put a couple 3G antennas in each Street View car and see what's out there.
That would be cool, because I bet there are probably a bunch of 3G antennas already in the car.
Yeah, I bet they're already phoning home with the 3G modem. So why not record the signal strength? Why not send back how many dBs they've got?
Right. So anyway, my point here is that T-Mobile is going to refocus on bring your own phone, no contract customers, which means that you're going to get a better deal on your contract, which is definitely the most expensive part of your smartphone.
Right. I mean, you.
And also, they're secretly building a network that supports iPhones and any other Android phone that you want to bring onto the network.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I have a feeling that eventually, when Verizon rips my unlimited data plan from my cold dead hands, that I'll probably go for something like this, where you bring your own phone, you pay less a month. That seems to make more sense to me.
How does free per month sound?
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of caveats to it. For one thing, you only get 500 megabytes per month.
Whoa.
But 500 megabytes, that's 0 cents per megabyte.
That's true.
So this is a company that we mentioned a few months ago when they were just a startup, and they're called FreedomPop. They are working on providing incredibly cheap wireless data plans. So 500 megabytes a month is going to be no cost. 2 gigabytes a month is only going to be $18 a month. And you can go up to 4 gigabytes a month for only $29 a month.
But what is the magnitude of their coverage throughout the United States?
Well, you know, that's when you start with a startup company. Their coverage is on Sprint's network. So it's right. The same as Sprint.
So that's actually pretty good in that case.
Right. But they're not offering any phones right now. They're only offering, wireless hotspots and laptop USB plugs.
Yeah, probably just because they're a little bit easier to maintain those kind of things than...
Right.
Yeah, so that kind of makes sense. Because once you start featuring phones and stuff like that, you know, the manufacturers get involved with the carriers, and there's all this discussion and stuff like that. That atmosphere is not really suited to a startup that's trying to do this kind of thing. So that makes sense. But yeah, $30 a month for 4 gig, I could probably get on that.
Yeah, especially, you know, you don't have to pay for the rest of the nonsense.
That's literally half my bill.
Yeah, and it's actually it's all 4G.
That's literally half my bill, and like what, 3-4 times as fast, more than that even if it's LTE,
right.
Since I'm stuck on 3G.
Well, it's not LTE right now. It's all WiMAX, but they're aiming for LTE.
Oh, that's right, because Sprint's WiMAX deal, they basically got screwed.
You mean Sprint did investing in WiMAX?
They did.
Well, they kind of screwed themselves in that case.
Yeah, they got into the market a little too early.
I was going to say we should turn on our afterburners.
We should turn them on.
All right, they're on. You know who's getting to the market a little bit late is HP, because now they're just announcing a Windows 8 tablet. It's going to be called the HP ElitePad 900.
Yeah, so this looks like a business play to me, doesn't it? I feel like HP is always into enterprise more than they're into general consumers.
Yeah, sure, you could call it that. I just call it copycat. Well, anyway, next story. Nest, our favorite high-tech thermostat, has come out with a version 2.0. So if you were waiting for them to work all the bugs out, I guess all the bugs are out, maybe? Nobody's tried it yet. We don't know.
Well, maybe not all the bugs, but most of the bugs, perhaps.
But it's available on pre-order now. So they say it scrolls much smoother.
So IHS iSupply has indicated that we are pretty much out of the apocalypse of hard drive prices due to the flooding in Thailand. So go over to Newegg, go over to Amazon, and buy three or four of them now that we're out of the the price hikes that we saw.
Yeah, good news. But, you know, always nice that people went for SSDs in the meantime.
Yeah, it's kind of true.
Now, a new study from the Pew Internet and American Life Project shows that ownership of tablets in the U.S. is up to about 25%. Now, a year ago, 80% of all tablet owners had iPads. Now it's just down to 52%, and almost half of all tablet owners have Android tablets.
That's what happens. You know, we've seen this happen over and over again. We saw it with Apple and Microsoft, and it's happening. It happened with Android phones, and now it's happening with tablets. So that's not terribly surprising to me. But Apple maintains a large amount of money share, even though they don't have as much market share. So that's kind of their strategy.
True. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's turn off the afterburners.
Okay, turn them off. Let's slow down a little bit. We'll get into the end user stories. I've got the one leading off here. We're going to get some Xbox music action pretty soon here, October 26th, the same time that Windows 8 is coming out. And they're going to have
Xbox
some...
Xbox music action. Chris, can I get some Xbox music action?
Do you have an Xbox?
No.
Oh, well, then you'll be... You will be left out, sadly.
Do you have an Xbox?
No.
Haha, you're left out too.
Yeah, so we're both left out of this, unfortunately. Well, I'm still clinging on to my media center. I don't want to dirty up all the inputs on my TV, so I want to stay on one input. So that's why I don't have an Xbox. But
that's kind of irrational. You know that, right?
Yeah, it is kind of irrational. It's making things simple for no reason, maybe.
You have an irrational input phobia.
Yeah, I have input phobia. We should come up with some scientific term for input phobia.
I think we just did, Chris. I think we just did.
No, something other than input. It would have to be something else. So,
all right. So what's so special about Xbox Music?
So, Taylor, what you can do is you can use the iOS app. That's what you'd want to do to get access to this.
With my non-existent Xbox.
So, the interesting part of this is that, as you know, you may or may not know, they're kind of killing Zune. They're killing the brand Zune. We're not going to really see Zune around anymore in the future, and they're running with the Xbox brand, and they're going to have some notion of free streaming with ads that support the streaming, kind of like Pandora or like the Spotify.
Okay.
So I don't know. There's not a lot more details there other than that. And they're going to have an Android app as well as an iOS app. And so we'll have to wait and see. It'll be interesting to see what exactly they're going for here and what this media picture looks like.
So October 26th is going to be a very big day for Microsoft.
Yeah, late October is going to be a very big time for Microsoft. They've got Windows 8 coming out. They've now got this Zune replacement Xbox Music coming out. It's going to be a very interesting time in general for Microsoft and its fans.
All right. Well, looking forward to that show.
Are you?
Well, aren't we getting all the news out of the way right now?
All right, well, let's get into our second story of the end user stories. Taylor, you've got one for us about browser speed tests.
Yeah, I just wanted to call this to our listeners' attention. Lifehacker periodically does these browser speed tests. They say, we're going to look at all the browsers that are out right now, and we're going to tell you which one's best for which. And they don't tell you which one is best. They have a number of different categories. So in this case, they ran Chrome, Firefox, Safari, and Opera, the latest versions of each, on a MacBook Air running Mountain Lion. And then they gave different categories for each. So a cold boot up, loading tabs, URL loading, so just loading one website, a cold restore with a bunch of tabs already open, a new open source benchmarking test called a Robo Hornet, memory usage, which is the one that's important to me, and then memory usage with extensions open. Since all of these are extensible browsers, you can add all these extensions on, and it really affects the memory usage quite significantly.
I'm disappointed they didn't use Internet Explorer 6 for Mac here.
Well, you really can't get it anymore.
Oh, really? The binaries must be floating out there somewhere.
I'm sure they are, but they're not easy to find. It's not, you know, it's less accessible than, like, IceWeezy. You know, it's not a mainstream browser at this point.
All right, well, I will switch to RockMelt on the Mac.
But it's interesting because a different browser won in each category.
In every single category, it's a different browser. That's bizarre.
Well, there are only four browsers, and there are more than four categories, so there were some repeats. And their overall winner, based on an arbitrary conglomeration of categories, was Safari.
Yeah, it looks like it. So Safari pulled away, what is this, four of them? Yeah, four categories, and then Firefox and Chrome and Opera got one of the categories each. So I guess, despite that, depending on what's important to you, depending on which category is important to you, you might get Opera, for example, if you really want to get a fast cold restore.
Yeah, absolutely. And that a cold restore is important to me. But the most important thing to me is memory usage. And Safari came out ahead in that. But we don't have time or interest to go over all the different categories. So if you want to know which browser you should use on your Mac, you should check out our show notes.
Yeah, so head to the show notes. We've got a link to Lifehacker there, and you can check out the results. And yeah, memory is really important for you because you are a tab junkie, unabashedly.
Yep, so many tabs, absurd number of tabs. Reading List has helped me, which is another reason why I stick with Safari.
Yeah, Reading List is a really nice feature.
Yep, and now Reading List preloads all of my saved tabs, so I can access them all offline.
Nice. So it just caches the state of the tab and then you can read that exactly as it was when you looked at it?
Yeah, and it does it on my phone too.
Nice. And does it sync with your phone even?
Does the Reading List sync with my phone? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So if you save a link in Reading List, then the contents of the link that you saved are saved to your phone and then you can read them later offline on your phone.
Yep.
Nice. Good integration there.
Totally.
Well, so let's get into some Gmail. This is a pretty fantastic. This is the smallest feature that matters to me at all, but
but also good integration.
Yes, also good integration. Gmail is adding support for searching attachments to your emails. Now, if you had attached a .txt file to your email, then you would be able to search it. Same goes for HTML. Not sure why you would attach HTML to an email, but so if it was plain text, you would be able to search it previously. And what they're doing here is they're adding all of the Office document formats and PDFs. So if you search for a term in your Gmail inbox and it happens to be in a PDF, then that email will surface in your search. So this is it seems pretty basic, but I think this will help out a lot.
It honestly seems kind of superfluous to me right now because I just don't think I'll ever get used to trying to search for something that was in a PDF in an email. I'd rather just search for that email and then pull up the PDF.
Well, no, but that's
sometime down the road, 2 years from now, I'm going to search for something and
exactly.
The result is going to be inside an Office document, and I will have forgotten that, and that is going to be crucial. It's going to save my butt, but I'm not even going to think about it because it's just a thing that Gmail already had for 2 years.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're just going to start to see emails surface in your search habits that didn't surface before. And so anyways, I thought I'd mention it. There's not a whole lot of industry impact with this teensy little feature of Gmail, but Gmail keeps on trucking. You know, Outlook.com looks pretty nice, and Gmail just keeps on trucking. And
well, you know who else keeps on trucking? The Grateful Dead. You didn't think I was going to say that word, did you?
No, but not judging
the Grateful
from
Dead,
our show notes.
They're the ones who wrote that song, Keep on Truckin'. That was their song. But another musical artist that keeps on trucking is Neil Young.
Right, so we've got a story that we're passing along from The Verge, and I'm not sure I quite understand what is going on here. He's introducing a device, and he's made some bargains with Warner, Sony, and Universal to create files for this device called the Pono. And you can see a picture of it if you go to the show notes and click through on the link. It's this triangular, yellow, ugly brick MP3 player. And
It's an MP3 player from 2001.
It is.
I had one that looked remarkably similar.
Yeah. It's not too great looking from the hardware perspective, but
it's awful. I mean, I can't think of a reason why anyone would want to buy a music player this hideous.
Well, the idea is that you...
Unless it was 10 years ago.
With the new format that Neil Young is kind of sponsoring here and striking deals for, that it is master quality audio. So is that something we care about? Or I'm unclear. I thought this had been decided already.
I thought that we already had MP3 players, and certain phones that were capable of producing very high quality audio. I didn't think that there was some sort of quantum leap between the better producing audio players on the market and master quality audio. But I guess Neil Young disagrees with me.
Neil Young disagrees. And this is interesting because I would love to get higher quality stuff, just not from this thing, right? I want a file format that is lossless, and I want the master of the recording to be at that same quality. The problem is you have a master, and they're typically 24-bit, and they're higher quality. And then you master it down to 44.1 16-bit for CD, and you lose a little bit of the quality. And I'm not sure we humans can even tell the difference between CD quality and the master quality unless you are in the perfect acoustic room. But I don't see this device doing what he says it's doing. That I don't quite understand how that's going to work without some sort of studio room, which, less than 1% of the people on this earth have a room that you can even tell the difference between high quality MP3s and high quality uncompressed mastered tracks like he's talking about.
Even if you had this magical room, you would still be listening to your music on an analog 1/8-inch jack, where there has to be some signal degradation.
Well, it has to get analog at some point. The question is, what is the processing that makes it analog?
Well, I mean, the real audio files will usually tell you that it just has to stay analog the entire time, but this doesn't do that.
Yeah, and he's one of them. He said in the little thing on David Letterman that this is as close as you will get to real analog sound. So I don't know about this, and you know, as an audio engineer, I'm not sure what to think of this. I'll have to get my ears on it.
Well, but some studies have shown that people of our generation, our ears are already broken.
Yeah, that's true. Just from having...
They say that music of this high quality sounds bad to us.
Yeah, it could be because we've had earbuds stuck in our ears and playing music way too loud, way too close to our ear canal for so many years that most of us have some...
Excuse me, Chris. I am done with earbuds. I don't have earbuds anymore. I have ear pods now.
That's right. So most of us put the ear pods too close to our ear canal, and I still, ear pods, I can't say it.
Well, it brings me to my next point is, I already mentioned it earlier in the show, but I got my iPhone 5 this week.
Cool.
And these new ear pods, I'm getting used to saying it. I'm liking saying it now. Although it does make it sound ridiculous because they're just earbuds. They're not that great. But they did do something really interesting, which I noticed today. I was on the subway, the metro in Washington, D.C., and for the first time, I was listening to music. I didn't have the volume turned all the way up. It was only at about 70%. And not only could I hear the music perfectly clearly, I could also hear the station announcements from the train conductor.
Oh, that's interesting.
none of those things have ever happened to me before.
So have you ever had like a nice quality isolating in-ear Shure headphones or something like that?
Yes, my previous earphones were isolating dual driver in-ear headphones.
Made by?
Apple.
Made by Apple. No, you got to go to the audio guys. You got to go to Shure.
Okay, but Apple was great, but the thing is that they were isolating. So I could listen to music with the volume not turned up, but they were isolating so I couldn't hear anything around me, right? The quality was great, but I couldn't hear anything else.
Right. It was isolating you from everything.
Right. So with these new EarPods, I could manage to hear the music perfectly clearly, but then also hear ambient noise.
Interesting. So I'd like to hear that, but I also think that if I put your earbuds in my ears, that would be a little gross. So maybe we won't do that, but maybe I got to get a pair of these and try them out.
You probably don't. I mean, considering this, the amount that you've already spent on headphones, I don't think that you should go out and spend $30 just on a pair of by any audiophile standards, mediocre earphones.
Well, I can deal, when I'm walking out in the world, I can deal with I can deal with low quality audio because you can't really tell the difference because of what's going on around you. And when there's that amount of noise around you, you cannot isolate it. You can't noise cancel it. There's just not much you can do when you're out on a busy street or something like that. But I've switched to Bluetooth for that reason.
Yeah, I know.
So I would feel severely handicapped going back to a wire.
Wow. The things you do for technology. Okay, I just have a couple of other quick notes. We talked about the iPhone 5 so much in the last few weeks, but with my hands on, I want to mention a few more things that I've noticed. One is that a lot of the apps that I'm using are still the 3x2 old screen format, and so there are black boxes on the top and the bottom of the screen. But it's honestly not that bad. I notice it for sure, and it bugs me a little bit. But with the keyboard moved a half inch up from the bottom of the screen, I can still type fine, and that doesn't bother me very much. Another very good thing is that LTE. Man, LTE is fast.
Yeah, it is
awesome. I was at a baseball game, and you never have good service at a baseball game. But I managed to upload a 20 megapixel photo taken using the new Panorama app.
Yeah, I feel like you don't even realize it until you've done something like that.
Yeah.
And you think, well, okay, this will take a couple minutes, and then it just happens, and you're like, what?
Yeah, it's great. But the other thing is that I almost never get LTE service indoors. Now, on AT&T, they do the fake 4G symbol for HSPA+, and then they switch it to LTE if you have LTE. Inside, just about everywhere, I only get the 4G symbol and not the LTE symbol, which is interesting. But when I really want the fastest speed is when I'm outdoors somewhere, usually. Third and last note, the battery life on the iPhone 5 is worse than my iPhone 4 after 2.5 years.
Wow. So those but three cores eat more power, I guess.
Right. This is a bigger screen. This is LTE, and it's switching off between networks a lot more frequently, and it's a faster processor. So it's a trade-off, and it hasn't died on me yet, and I've been using it pretty heavily every day since I've had it. I've only had it 2 days. I guess for over about 8 hours, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., it went from 95% to 25%. That's, and that's a bigger drop than I'm used to.
That's still better than most Android phones, I think.
Yeah, but that speaks to how good the iPhone 4 battery was. And by the way, the 4S, not even close. The 4S is the same or worse than the 5.
Interesting. So with more power comes less battery. All right,
Okay, but
well.
I'm not the only one who got a new gadget this week. And so, Chris, we need to hear from you about.
Yeah, so I actually went ahead and bought a new laptop. I saw some of these prices drop on the Ultrabooks, and I'm sure they'll actually drop even more once Windows 8 is out, because then they won't be current at all. So I picked up
But yeah, I
a
mean, you'll still be able to get the free upgrade to Windows 8, right?
it's 14, no, it's like $14 for that upgrade. Ouch.
I hope it was worth it. I mean, if it was a $100 drop in price, then of course it was worth it.
Yeah,
So, but what kind of laptop did you
so
get?
this is an Acer Aspire
Ooh,
S3.
did you get the new touchscreen Acer Aspire?
No,
Oh.
I got the old Ultrabook 951 is the model number, which is very catchy. But I've only had it for a day, so I can't really make a judgment about this thing. But I haven't had a laptop in a long time, so I'm kind of instantly impressed by how thin these Ultrabooks are, and we'll see how the battery life and performance is with this thing. It's a Core i5, so I'm looking forward to actually using a real laptop. See, I've always had a netbook that was light and thin and all that, and a desktop that I came home to sit at. So it'll be interesting to see what I do with a light and thin real laptop.
And what kind of graphics you got on that baby?
It's whatever the integrated stuff is. It's not terribly important
The
for what I
current
do.
generation Intel integrated.
Yeah, they're
So it's the HD 4000.
that sounds about right. I'd have to go look it up.
Okay, and then what's the resolution on the screen?
Now that's the sad part. It's 1366 by 768.
That is sad, Chris. Please tell me it's an 11-inch notebook.
No. It's 13.3.
Oh.
But I'm okay
Well,
with
otherwise it sounds like a fine.
it.
And
Yeah, I think
judging by the Acer Aspires, I mean they're beautiful notebooks.
it really is. It really is. It's well designed, it seems. So I've got to kind of wait and see how the durability is. If it cracks in my bag or anything like that. And I do have a little sleeve for it. But so far, what I can at least say I'm impressed with is the dual SSD setup seems fantastic to me. It's got a little 20 gig caching SSD, and then it's got a 320 gig platter drive, and this thing just wakes up in absolutely no time.
That's what SSDs do, but I don't know. I'm all about the full SSD. You just gotta go whole hog.
Well, what I'd like to see, and probably will see at some point soon, is Windows 8 on this thing, because Windows 8 on my netbook booted in just a handful of seconds. It was under 10 seconds. And combining that with the Core i5, with the mobile Core i5 and a SSD might just be a fantastic technology stack. So I'm kind of looking forward to that, see what happens there.
Yeah, me too. Well, I look forward to getting my hands on your new computer.
Yeah, so I'll probably talk about it a little bit more once I've really dug into it. So yeah, this is my first laptop upgrade in a very long time, so it'll be very interesting for me. I have to get used to it again. I have to stop using a mouse and use a trackpad.
Ah, you'll get used to that.
No, and
Does it have multi-touch?
it does, yeah, and it's got the single click thing, which irritates me. There's no mouse buttons.
Oh, like the Apple trackpads?
Yeah, exactly right. So I'll have to get used to that.
You'll get used to it.
Yeah,
It's
I'll get used to it. Also, they do, if you click in the bottom right of the mouse pad, give you a right click. So I guess it's not so bad.
right. You'll start getting into some mouse pad foo.
I think I'll stick with my keyboard foo.
Oh, you mean shortcut foo?
I could be saying that. In fact, I need to go to Shortcut Foo and learn some things.
Well, that's our tip of the week this week. It's a website called Shortcut Foo. It's shortcutfoo.com with two O's, FOO. And it is one of Chris's favorite topics. That's keyboard shortcuts. And it teaches you keyboard shortcuts. Now, as an avid Apple user, I'm a fan of the trackpad foo and the mouse multi-touch foo. Which, Apple has all these built-in gestures, which are great for controlling your computer. But Chris insists that keyboard shortcuts are even faster. So I'm going to start using Shortcut Foo to train myself in keyboard shortcuts.
They're definitely
And
faster. What you have to do is go to google.com and then search for a Taylor phone, for example, and then hit Control F and type Taylor to get the first result, and then hit Escape, and then hit Control Enter to open a new tab, and then Control W to close it, and all that kind of stuff. It's way faster if you can adopt a workflow like that.
Well, I use Control W or Command W in my case. I use stuff like that, Command T and all that other stuff. But I still like the trackpad multi-touch options better. But maybe once I know all of them, that I won't be.
Here's
but that
what you
still
should
all
do.
Sounds so complicated, Chris. What I really want is a shortcut for Googling.
Yeah, well, you do. You open Spotlight.
You have to tell me the Mac shortcut, Chris.
Okay.
You have to know it off the top of your head.
All right. So you hit Command. What's Spotlight? Command Spacebar.
Yeah.
Okay. So you hit Command Spacebar. You type SAF. You hit Enter. Launches Safari. You hit Control L to get to the address bar.
I only have to type S to launch Safari, actually.
Oh, okay. So you type S, and then you do Command L to get to the address bar, and then you type at Taylor Phone. You look for your Twitter account, and then you're golden. You're good from there.
No, okay. I'm already in Safari. I want one shortcut that takes me right to Google.
In Safari?
Yeah.
Control or Command L?
No, that just took me to the search bar.
Right, which is Google.
No, it isn't Google. If that would take me to Google. That's one more button that goes to Google.
Yeah, so you'd have to do Command L, G, Enter, probably.
All right, so you are not yet a true shortcut ninja, but you could be. You'd probably get there a lot faster than the rest of us if
I'm
you were using
there.
Shortcut Foo. And with that, I want to backtrack a little bit to my Green Tech story of the week.
Yeah, please do. We had a good segue there, so we had to take it.
Now, this one actually comes from last week, but I just think it's really cool. Chris, you're a little bit older than me, so I don't know if you remember when most of the world's oil production was coming from the United States.
Not sure I do either.
No, yeah, you don't. I was just making fun of you because you're older than me.
What year was this?
1884.
Oh, I remember that. Those were heady days, Taylor, let me tell you.
So anyway, there's a long history of oil exploration in North America, and a lot of these oil rigs and derricks and wells are abandoned and unused. But people are finding new uses for them, for these very deep wells. They're going to use them for geothermal power. It turns out a lot of these wells have dug down so deep that it gets up to about 150 degrees Celsius or higher.
Cool.
And
so,
you can use that for considerable geothermal power using the rig that's already there.
So even if you've got an oil well that's dried up, you've got a mechanism by which you can get deep enough down to get geothermal energy. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's already there. You're already deep enough down.
Yeah, that's really cool. So
yeah.
Thus, not spending the energy to drill down deep enough to get geothermal energy, which is even more green.
Exactly.
So it's a green resource made even more green by the fact that you don't have to make this upfront investment of drilling. Interesting.
Right. Yeah, I think that's pretty awesome. That's about all there is to it. There are a bunch of companies that have formed up to try and buy up all the abandoned oil rigs for this purpose.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, we did the tip of the week already, so let's skip over that, and we can go right on to our kicker. What do you got for us?
All right. So the kicker this week is a New Yorker cover. Those are always hilarious, but this one comes to us by way of Mad Magazine, by way of CNET.
This is a long chain of telephone.
Right.
Luckily,
okay,
the internet doesn't lose much information when you do that.
Anybody who's ever seen a New Yorker cover knows that they're very often illustrated covers and that many of them are very clever. But there is a particularly famous one that has an illustrated map of New York that kind of presents New York and the rest of the world in stereotypes of New Yorkers. But what Mad Magazine has done is it says the New Yorker map of New York now using Apple Maps. And it just takes that same map and then gives funny, incorrect names all over the place.
Yeah, I don't think Qatar is in New York there.
I don't think Wasilla is right across the Sea of Galilee from Manhattan.
Oh, look, Seattle's right there, too. That's nice.
Oh, no, Seattle's across the Mississippi,
right.
Which is sort of true, except Seattle is not an island.
Right, yeah, so that's a little confusing. I would think that Seattle would not be an island off the coast of Venezuela.
Right, and the Galapagos Islands are not right next to Qatar. And Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Cheyenne.
I've never been there. I don't know how it's pronounced.
Yeah, I've never been there either, but yeah, it's Cheyenne. So if you are in the Yukon Territory, you can take a trip over to Chad, and according to this map, at very least. And yeah, so.
Kuala Lumpur is right near Brooklyn.
So I had no idea that all of these places were so close together. And you can cross the equator from Chad, and I've got some traveling to do, Taylor. So
Well,
I'm gonna take my I'm
just
gonna
don't
take
use Apple Maps.
right. Well, I was gonna say I was gonna take my iPhone with Apple Maps and go to town, but I guess not.
No, go to town. I would love to see where you end up.
That would make a good YouTube video or something. A day in the life with Apple Maps.
So you gotta see this picture. If you're listening and you haven't seen this picture already, go see the picture. It's funny.
Yeah, so check out our show notes, and we will have a link to the picture with the CNET article and all, and you can see exactly what we're talking about. So that will do it for this week, unless you have any other last thoughts here, like how to contact you.
How to contact me? Well, I have been sending a radio signal to Earth for the past 15 years. Containing a bunch of alphanumeric digits, where if you decode it in the right way, it's a set of schematics for a large spacefaring vessel. Now, if you build the vessel and then put one single astronaut into the vessel, I will appear to that astronaut as that astronaut's father, and then explain the meaning of the life, the universe, and everything in a horrible movie called Contact. That's how you contact me.
Yeah, and also they didn't even tell you in that movie that the answer is 42.
Right, that was for the sequel.
Yeah, for the sequel that never
Right,
happened.
yeah. But I don't know. Probably an easy way to reach me would be through my Twitter account, and that's at TaylorPhone.
Yes, and I am also on Twitter. I am at Chris Hale Barnes. So give us a follow, hit us up, and ask us some questions. We'll talk about your comments on the show if you'd like. So that will do it for this week. Thank you, Mr. Marr. And thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, as we have mentioned, at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts, so have a look at Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and the Movie Podcast. You can send us some feedback if you like on Twitter at the end user or the end user at thedigitalmediazone.com. You can join us live as we record every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. This week we were actually on time, so that's a good thing. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Moss.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye bye.